day and welcome to Detroit Today. On 101.9 WDET, I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson. If you saw the photos or have friends in New York, you were alerted to something very strange. Last week, New York City was covered in an orange haze. That's because the city had some of the worst air pollution in the world due to smoke that came south from more than 100 wildfires burning in Canada. Over the past 6 weeks, hundreds of wildfires have spread across that country, causing mass evacuations and the burning of millions of acres. Because of this, Canada has been at National Preparedness Level 5, meaning that country has mobilized all of its resources to fight fires. But those forest fires haven't just impacted the American Northeast. Meteorologists with the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy recently issued air quality alerts for high levels of fine particulate in the air. That's in part because a grayling wildfire in northern Michigan burned more than 2,400 acres last week also. The fire was so bad, parts of I-75 were closed and grayling residents were forced to evacuate for a time. While fires haven't continued much in our state, Michigan is at a very high or extreme risk of fire due to intense heat and low precipitation. A little bit later in today's show, we're going to speak with District 6 Detroit City Councilwoman Gabriela Santiago Romero about how residents in her district are managing poor air quality and then discuss a new bill that would help restore or would restore net metering for solar projects in the state. But before we get there, we want to discuss the wildfires and air quality. What is the origin of these wildfires in Canada? How has it impacted Americans and specifically Michiganders? And what should we be doing to protect ourselves from poor air quality and prevent wildfires from happening in the first place? To talk about this, we have two guests with us. First, to start off, Stephanie Hanksba, a meteorologist in the Air Quality Division at Michigan's Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy. Stephanie, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you.
We also
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'd be
good.
Better if we didn't have as much air quality concerns, which we'll get to in a moment. But I also want to introduce our other guest, Dr. Chris Stockdale, who is a wildland fire, who is the wildland fire research and extension scientist at Natural Resources Canada. Dr. Stockdale, welcome to Detroit Today as well.
Thank you very much.
Stephanie, we will get to you in a moment, but I'm going to start off here with Dr. Stockdale, since he's at the scene of the crime, so to speak. How did these wildfires even get started in the first place in Canada, and where are we at with them right now?
It's a funny way to put it that I'm at the scene of the crime, because it's a pretty big scene. It started this fire situation that we're in was becoming apparent that it was a risk coming up. In the late winter, we could see that we'd had very, very low precipitation, not a lot of snow across the whole country, several, long extended kind of deficits of moisture for several years leading up to this. Sure enough, in late April, early May, fires started erupting in Western Canada, in Alberta and British Columbia. There was a large heat dome event that was sitting over the region, bringing very high, unseasonably high temperatures. We were 10 to 15 degrees above, 10 degrees to 15 degrees Celsius above seasonal norms at that point in time, really low humidity and high winds. And that coupled with human activity on the landscape led to many fire starts, most of them likely accidental human starts, some lightning ignitions. And then as this heat dome event spread across or moved across the country into eastern Canada, we started seeing, fires erupt in Saskatchewan, some in Manitoba. Ontario was originally spared, but is getting pretty hot now. And then saw an enormous explosion of lightning-driven fires in the province of Quebec just a week and a half ago, which is the smoke event you guys are referring to largely down there.
It's interesting to hear you talk about it, because while conditions can be ripe, and you did mention a lot of human starts probably accidental, is this something where one fire occurring can have a cascading effect on making it more likely for others to occur? Or are these just a bunch of independent things that happen to be popping up at the same time, causing us to have this experience right now?
That's a kind of a complex question to answer. I'll try to do it as briefly as possible. In these really extreme conditions, in high wind-driven events, which is what we've been seeing largely in Quebec and Alberta, Saskatchewan, British Columbia, when the fires ignite, the control measures are very limited. The intensity of these fires is such that direct attack, like from humans on the ground, is impossible. It's way too hot. People can't get within hundreds of meters of these things. I mean, the heat exposure would be fatal. So we can only deal with like indirect attack methods, such as aircraft dropping water and retardant. However, even that at a certain intensity begins to fail. Just the spread of the fire is so quick.
Yeah.
That it jumps over any measure you try to put in the ground. So yes, a single fire can lead to many, many more because they start kind of generating their own wind patterns, spitting out embers, you know, hundreds of meters to kilometers in advance of themselves. So one fire breeds many fires. But the conditions, especially like the lightning explosion fires that we've seen, that we've been seeing in the last several weeks, absolutely, those are, you know, like we expect kind of patterns of it. I mean, you prime the fuel on the landscape with hot, dry weather, hot, dry and windy weather. It's like setting up your perfect campfire. You know, you've got really snappy kindling on the fire. Those are all the twigs and needles and leaves on the ground, dry grass from last year. And then you've got really dry, big wood, too, because of the moisture deficit. So you kind of set up imagine your perfect campfire, and now imagine scaling up your perfect campfire to cover millions of hectares of land.
Mm, very harrowing.
And then send a,
go ahead.
And then send a lightning storm over top of that.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Those conditions would be pretty rough. And as a result of lots of things happening, we're having an impact even here in Michigan, someplace that I don't think a lot of us would have expected to be impacted. But I guess air quality doesn't understand borders. And Stephanie, we've seen impacts here in Michigan with fires. Can you tell us what the impact has been for us here in our state?
You know, the impact here in our state, this has been a very unique situation, and one we really haven't specifically been in here in Michigan. You know, it kind of started for us on Sunday, June 4th, where we issued our first air quality action day for the Upper Peninsula. That was the area that was first affected from the wildfire smoke. Moved into the Upper Peninsula from the Northeast. And kind of on Saturday, the day prior, we had seen levels starting to increase and then looked again Sunday morning. And to be honest, looking at satellite imagery, it was quite interesting because you could just see these waves of smoke plumes coming down on a Northeast wind. And we knew it was going to hit the Upper Peninsula. So we did issue, like I said, an action day for Sunday, the 4th of June make people aware of that, because we really wanted to get the word out there that there was going to be deteriorating air quality. And then down in the Lower Peninsula, as we kept, you know, close eye definitely on these fires. And for us last week, I shouldn't say thankfully we were under high pressure, but it made the forecasting of the plumes a bit easier in the sense that satellite imagery did such a good job at picking up these plumes. So we could kind of see when they were dropping down, and they started moving into the Lower Peninsula on June 7th, last week, Wednesday. It was pretty much Wednesday through Friday of last week that we saw our highest pollution levels. Like it was explained from the wildfires up in Manitoba and some in Ontario as well. And those plumes of wildfire smoke, that brings down a pollutant we call fine particulate matter, or PM2.5. That is the pollutant that was very elevated during this time period of last week.
Well,
we saw levels.
Go ahead. No, please.
Yeah, I was going to say our levels for this this pollutant, fine particulate matter, reached the unhealthy for sensitive groups range. That is the USG range. That is the level that we start issuing air quality alerts, because when levels reach this this range is really when people who are sensitive to increased air quality start seeing the effects of air quality. So again, we really just want to get the message out there that there is high pollution so people can do what they can to protect their own health.
Yeah. And so let's get into what those things are specifically. Where are the areas hardest hit and the areas that people should be concerned about? And then you also mentioned for people to protect their health, what recommendations would you have for people to say, hey, if this is of concern to you, you should be looking at it. These are things you should consider doing to lower the impact on your life.
During this episode, we did have the worst air quality that we saw here in Michigan actually ended up being kind of from the Thumb area on southwest to about the Grand Rapids, Muskegon area on south. So that's where we saw the highest elevated levels of fine particulate matter during that time period across the state. And really, things that we're asked people to do is, especially the sensitive groups, people with lung disease, including, asthma, heart disease, any type of respiratory illnesses, should really limit prolonged exertion outside. Because those people with pre-existing conditions are going to be the ones affected first and the most affected. Ways people can help reduce and eliminate, potential increased pollution locally in your area would be, outdoor burning, to stay away from that. Also to reduce any vehicle trips or idling as much as possible. Those are things that we'd ask people to do during, maybe a normal increased pollution episode. This, where it was particularly from wildfire smoke coming in, there isn't much you can do to prevent that. So again, we are just asking people to really, limit exertion outside. One thing that's interesting with fine particulate matter is that is not necessarily just an outdoor pollutant. Last week, we did have cooler temperatures, that it wasn't overly hot outside. So a lot of people had windows open. Well, when you have the windows open, you can bring that air. The air, does come into your home.
Right.
So that was one thing that we are getting the word out to. And in situations particularly like this, with wildfire smoke, you may want to consider keeping the windows closed to prevent that polluted air to come into your home as well. And really just to keep, abreast of the situation, to pay attention to air quality levels. So you know what to do when levels get elevated. So you can really do what you can to protect your health. And I know there were some schools we had heard of too, which is a good thing as well. If levels are really high and elevated, to even, reschedule outdoor activities or stay inside instead of spending that time outside. And one other thing with fine particulate matter too, in the episode that we were in last week, when we have ozone's a fairly common summertime pollutant in the state of Michigan, especially across the south and the southeastern portion of the state, where that you can, protect yourself by not exercising maybe in the morning or waiting till later in the afternoon, because levels are primarily an afternoon, early evening event, and then they subside in the overnight hours with the lack of sunlight. But fine particulate matter is not like that. We saw levels that were high throughout the whole entire day. So it's also not something that you can really say, okay, go exercise in the morning, that you would be fine then and not in the afternoon. Really, it was something that was elevated during the whole calendar day and is not fluctuating necessarily by the time of day.
Right, right. We're speaking with Stephanie Hanksba, meteorologist with Eagle here on 101.9 WDET, and Dr. Chris Stockdale. I want to hear from you as well. If you're out there, have you been impacted by the poor air quality in the state? And what has that experience been like for you? What concerns do you have about this event that's happening right now? You can give us a call, 313-577-1019. Again, 313-577-1019, and we can work you into the conversation. Before I loop you back in, Chris, one more question for you. Stephanie, is there an experience, period of time that you're looking at us being worried or on a heightened alert right now? How long should people be looking into and monitoring this situation with our air quality?
In all honesty here,
go ahead.
Sorry. here in Michigan, I would have to say, our air pollution has improved over the past few days. This last week, the cooler temperatures coming in, some precipitation has really helped out as well. However, looking at extended forecast maps, it does look like next week we move into, again, a drier, warmer period, which really the rain that we've received is kind of short-term improvement. If we do get into another period of dry, warm conditions, that potential wildfire danger is going to be high again. And really, it's something we pay attention to here at Air Quality daily, because we want to pay attention to the wildfires, where they are, when these smoke plumes are going to be moving into our state, so we can do what we can to issue these air quality alerts to alert the public of them.
You know, and before we move on, Dr. Stockdale, I do have to loop you back into the conversation because you're seeing what the impact is like for folks there on the ground in Canada. For those of us who aren't so familiar, if you can let us know what it's looking like for you and what the strategy is going to be moving forward to hopefully reduce these kind of impacts.
Well, the forecast right now, as Stephanie just referred to, I mean, in Western Ontario, we are seeing a long, like a continued drying trend going there. So the fire danger is indeed rising in the part of Canada that's probably closest to you. And we're expecting increased fire activity in that region. The fires in Alberta, like throughout Canada right now, really the only thing that's going to put these out is extended rainfall. Suppression operations from aircraft and personnel are really just on the mop up, you know, kind of cleaning up the edges of fires where the fire's already gone through, trying to put up hot spots so they don't reignite and flare up again. So we're waiting for some really good weather. In Alberta, it's looking a little bit positive. We see in central Alberta, we're seeing a significant amount of rainfall coming right now, actually. It's pouring rain in my yard, which is a tremendous relief. But up in the north still, there is, it's very hot and dry with very little precip in the forecast. Quebec, there's very little precipitation in the forecast. So, I mean, this, we're expecting a significant extended fire season carrying through the summer this year.
And Dr. Stockdale, before I let you go then, does that mean that we could have more smoke in Michigan and in the Northeast Corridor based on what you're hearing from us? Like, this is something that could keep propping up this summer.
I wish I could tell you that you don't have to worry about it, but it's looking, I mean, it all depends on atmospheric circulation patterns too, and which way the wind is blowing. We will be generating a lot of smoke. Okay. Where we choose to send that is at the mercy of the atmospheric flow patterns.
I think the last time I heard that was at a Snoop Dogg concert I attended back in the West Coast, but we're going to have to leave it there. Dr. Stockdale, I appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us here on Detroit Today.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Stephanie, we're going to keep you on across the break and have you join Councilwoman Gabriela Santiago Romero as we continue our look at how Detroit is handling air pollution right now here on 101.9 WDET.
Your neighborhood,
your community,
your voice.
Join the conversation on 101.9 WDET.
It's 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson on this edition of Detroit Today, where we're taking a look at our air quality here in Michigan, especially given the wildfires that have been blazing in Canada, having an impact not only on Northeast, on the Northeast Corridor of the United States, but also right here in Michigan. And we're going to continue that conversation. Also hear from you for any questions that you have, like if you've been impacted by poor air quality in the state. Let us know what that impact has been like for you, what that experience has been like for you, or also what questions or concerns you have about wildfire safety. To help us get into that, we're continuing our conversation with Stephanie Hanksba, who is a meteorologist in the Air Quality Division at Michigan's Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy. And Stephanie, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned when we're in this current state that it's not a great idea necessarily to open your window to let some of the air in when air quality is so poor. But one of the things I was thinking about with that is, does air really know a boundary, right? Air's getting into your house somehow. I would think as a layperson, am I just recycling bad air in there? Or why would it be better for me to keep the window closed? How does that protect me in terms of an air quality situation when we have the concerns that we have right now?
Well, by keeping the windows closed, it's just stopping that outdoor air from coming in. And potentially if you have, excuse me, sorry about that. If you do have some type of filter system, I guess if you do have air conditioning, that could help pull some of the pollutants out of the air that is being recirculated within the home. So, you know, it's just one other means that you can do to help keep the pollutants and the poor air quality from coming inside your home.
Got it. So the filtration system in our air conditioning would be sufficient to help reduce these impacts.
It could potentially help, yes, to filter some of that out.
Very good, very good. And right now, to join us on the conversation, we also have District 6 City Councilwoman Gabriela Santiago Romero. Councilmember Santiago Romero, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. I know that this is an issue that even before we've had these impacts because of the Canadian wildfires that you've been interested in for your district, specifically because of poor air quality that your residents have to deal with. Can you describe for listeners who might not be so familiar why you've already had concerns about air quality in your district and what you're hoping to do to prevent that?
Absolutely. And thank you for the conversation and the question. This is something that residents in Southwest Detroit District 6 and 4217 have been dealing with. The notion of the air that they're breathing is quite literally harming them, oftentimes killing them. And that is because of the industry that we have. We have a ton of truck traffic in District 6, and residents living in Southwest Detroit, anyone living within 500 feet, or that equates to two blocks, in a heavy truck industrialized area, are 2 to 3 times to get asthma. There has been a recent report from the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America that puts Detroit at the top spots for a most challenging place to live with if you have asthma. I have heard of residents that are moving into the district, adults in their 30s and their 40s who want to move in for the excitement of the city, of all the changes and the growth, who within a year get asthma. And that is something that is heartbreaking, yeah, and scary to know that as we are building and creating a beautiful, fun city where we are inviting more people, we need to remember that people here have always dealt with the impacts of industry. And as we are trying to really grow our base and our residents here, we need to also remember that we can't bring them into a place that is unhealthy as well.
Yeah, and Councilwoman, we're going to take a... Absolutely, Councilwoman. We're going to look into a little bit more of that and potential solutions also. But before I loop you back into the conversation, I did want to ask you, Stephanie, about the way this air quality impacts us, the ways Michigan is looking to kind of handle this, because this seems to be a newer situation that we're dealing with. Are there any strategies that we have right now in the state that you're aware of, other than hopefully waiting for weather to subside or weather to help us out, that we're looking to try to reduce these impacts?
No, and unfortunately, with wildfire smoke moving in, there's not a whole lot we can do. But like I talked about before, you know, there are some things that we can do to help decrease the likelihood of increased pollution. With fine particulate, you know, in general, it would be, you know, some activities you can do to eliminate air pollution would be outdoor burning,
right,
to try to stay away from that. I know in more of a winter time thing, right, you know, residential wood burning devices is something that we ask people to really pay attention to. But again, that's more of a winter phenomenon, not something that I doubt right now people are really using those types of devices. You know, reducing vehicle trips, trying not to drive around as much, and not idling when you are in your vehicle. Those are some things for fine particulate or PM2.5 that you can help reduce or eliminate local contributions to increase pollution.
Yeah, what I'm hearing from you right now is it's something that we're all going to kind of have to take on and be together in order to help us through this period of time. But speaking of the period of time that we're looking at right now, as we are again talking about air quality here on Detroit Today, 101.9 WDET, where you can get involved as well by calling 313-577-1019. While we're talking about that, I kind of am looking at the historical context or wondering about that also, Stephanie. Sure. Has there been a period of time that you're aware of previously that we've had to deal with issues like this, or is this like a new phenomenon that you've seen in your history? I mean, what does it look like historically in terms of where we're at with this air pollution?
With the wildfire smoke event that we saw last week, I will say that it's not the first time we've ever been influenced by wildfire smoke in our state of Michigan. Over the past few years, there have been time periods. I want to say it was back in maybe 21. This summer, we did have a long period of time that we were influenced by smoke, but it can be influenced either at upper levels, and that was kind of what had happened in that situation. Depending on how far away the fires are, I know that back in 21, they were more up in Alberta, Canada. They're a lot further away from our state. And so when it was pushed over our region, it was high in the upper atmosphere. It almost just looked like more of a hazy cloud layer in the upper atmosphere, where it made the, you know, very beautiful looking sunsets and sunrises. But unfortunately, you know, that they're beautiful in those different colors because of the wildfire smoke up in the upper atmosphere. But what's different with this particular situation is those fires were a lot closer to our state. When you're thinking, you know, some of the fires were just north, northeast of Sault Ste. Marie. You know, that's not far, really, from the state. And being closer in proximity, that allowed those particulates to come down to the ground level a lot easier, because they were closer to ground level when they moved over into our region. So this is not the very first time we've ever seen wildfire smoke influence our state. However, it is the first time we've had such high elevated levels of fine particulate due to wildfire smoke. Any other increases we've seen, maybe we've seen increases into like the moderate range, nothing that really came close to the high levels that we saw last week. And a lot of it, like I said, it has to do with the close proximity. They were a lot closer to our state compared to other times that wildfire smoke had influenced us.
You know, we are talking again about the impacts of these air particulates. Before we get back to you, council member, I just want to ask you, Stephanie, you had mentioned these air particulates and how you have concerns about it. We've discussed what it means for people who are more at risk, but even for healthy individuals, how could long-term breathing of these air particulates, how could that show up in our lives and in the lives of people who are listening or say, hey, I'm fine, I'm healthy, I could probably risk it?
Well, one thing that we did try to also say last week when we were getting the word out is even people that generally are not susceptible to increased pollution, we really were trying to ask people to still try not to exert themselves too much and do strenuous activity. Anything that would require people, even general healthy people, from breathing heavily, because these particulates, fine particulate matter, PM2.5, the 2.5 portion of it is the size. I mean, these particles are so small. The width of a hair follicle, it's actually even smaller than that. So they're so small, and that's why that they're so bad for people, especially with respiratory illnesses, but even the general public, because they're so small, they can be breathed in into the lungs, and that's when they start causing, you know, maybe inflammation, people start really seeing the effects of these. So even we are asking people that generally have good health, when you have elevated levels that are that high, and we had some hourly levels that were even higher than on our unhealthy for sensitive groups range, where the daily averages did not average that. There were a few hours within the day that levels were quite elevated, where even people who are usually not susceptible or don't see effects of increased pollution really could have been seeing effects. So we even wanted the general public, just pretty much everybody, just to be aware, and to, you know, if you start, you know, feeling shortness of breath or anything like that, really just be aware of yourself, right, and you know your health, and just to take care of that health and try not to exert yourself too much.
Right. But Council Member Santiago Romero, as we bring you back into the conversation, for you in District 6, from what I'm hearing from you earlier, this is a lived experience that your constituents have to deal with on a regular basis. You've been telling us, how does that show up for you here? And what are the things that you're looking to do with state partners to try to fight this impact on your area in the city of Detroit?
Yeah, this is a daily lived experience. This has been so for generations of people in District 6 and in Southwest Detroit. And quite frankly, it seems to be an unfortunate truth to residents now living around Stellantis. So for me, what I would love to see more is more enforcement. So Our office is working on a anti-idling fugitive dust ordinance, a truck route ordinance, to ensure that we have policies in place and protections and enforcement that would allow there to be ticketing if there is idling of trucks in our neighborhoods. We hear of these concerns often. We ask our residents, if you're listening to this now, please take a picture, send it over to us. We're working with the city now to use our Improved Detroit app to allow you to take photos and to report when there is a truck idling in your community. We need to ensure that we have good community benefits when a company like a Stellantis or another industry is coming into the city for the jobs, which we understand we need. We need to also understand that there are people living in the same proximity and they deserve healthy and safe communities. So what are the benefits that the companies could be giving? They can be ensuring that they themselves do sweep cleaning each and every day. The particles that have been mentioned now regarding fire and pollution, there is dust, fugitive dust, that is awful for people to breathe in. So when you get the dust, when you have the emissions, when you have the truck emissions, and then when you have the fires, I am incredibly worried for my residents, for myself, who lives right in the middle of Southwest Detroit now, recently moving into the community around Clark Park. I walk out my door, I turn to the left, and I see the off-ramp of the Gordie Howe Bridge, which is very daunting to know that there is going to be that kind of traffic coming in into my neighborhood, onto my block. So there are a lot of policies that we can be setting in place to ensure protection, to ensure enforcement. There are creative solutions like ensuring that the trucks that are driving through our streets are hybrid, are clean. There are community benefits that industry can give, like I mentioned, street cleaning, because there's a lot of dust that happens around industry. They can be providing filters. We talk about filters. They themselves can pay to provide families homes that are living in proximity to their building with filters, with air filtration. They can also be investing in air monitoring. And another thing that our office is working on, instantly I reached out to the health department, and this was actually earlier this year, but we got right on it again in another conversation, around health impact studies. We need to be capturing data every single day around what the current issue is for us to know what solutions we need to be putting forth. So I'm really hoping that we have this be a line item for the city, that our health department works together with partners like the University of Michigan, Michigan State, Detroit Mercy, Wayne State, whoever wants to join us. We have incredible institutions here to be monitoring the impacts in our health living in industry, especially with climate change as well.
You know, I appreciate that you bring that up, Council Member Santiago Romero, because one of the things, thinking about truck idling, right, if you see that, I don't know how many people would necessarily know that that's an ordinance that would be in violation. So knowing that you can be the one to report that, or things that we can do on the ground right now to kind of help out with this. But another thing that I'm thinking about when I hear your response is just the tension between, you want to increase economic activity in the area. You mentioned, for example, the Gordie Howe Bridge, right? Access to that kind of transportation. But then also not wanting to have a negative impact on your community. How do we reconcile those differences? You know, things like you mentioned, maybe hybrid trucks enforcements. I mean, how do we reconcile the need for increased economic activity with the desire to decrease emissions and help out our residents?
Smart planning. Let's be smarter. Let's plan in a way that ensures protections for residents first. Let's look at our zoning. If we're going to bring in industry in the city, ensuring that there are 100 feet, 200, whatever data and research shows is helpful to decrease the impact of industry for our residents, I want to do that. There is a way for us to, I believe there needs to be, especially in this capitalistic society, if we're going to be relying on industry and the growth of it, which I know that we need to also be planning smart and putting people's health first. Because quite frankly, if we have this industry, if our residents are the ones at these jobs who are also impacted negatively in their health, you are quite frankly impacting your workforce that is now sick, that is unable to come out and work. We need to think holistically about what this means. And I think it goes down to smart planning, look at your zoning. And quite frankly, in our society, a lot of these high industrial areas are in Black and brown poor communities. So it's environmental racism. We need to also be very honest about what that is, because you don't see this kind of industry in Birmingham. You don't see this kind of industry in Farmington Hills. And if it's going to be here in our city, we need to ensure that there's buffering in between. We need to ensure that there are benefits that keep our residents safe. We can do it. We just have to have the will to do so.
I'm hearing enforcement being an important part of this conversation, zoning, relooking at that, really smart, intentional efforts at making sure we protect our citizens, because without your health, man, that's a tough way to continue your life. And that is a very important part of this conversation. That's why I'm glad that we had an opportunity to speak with you. Council Member Santiago Romero, thank you for joining us again on Detroit Today.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
And Stephanie Hanksba, a meteorologist in the Air Quality Division at Michigan's Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy. Thank you also for joining us on Detroit Today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
When we return, we're going to switch gears just a little bit, but continue thinking about things that we can do to help out with our environment, including specifically net metering and solar power. Because as we continue, we're going to look at technologies that can help improve it with State Senator Jeff Irwin and environmental law expert Nick Schreck. Stay tuned as Detroit Today continues.